this interview tape. It is December 16th, 2005, and this is an interview with Barbara Bloom of Cope, Oregon. This is a test. Test, this is an interview with Barbara Bloom, right?
Right, or Bobby.
Of Cope, Oregon, and it is December 16th, 2005.
Okay.
Okay, the first thing I'd like to ask you is to tell me your full name and birth date, where you were born.
Well, my full name is Barbara May, M-A-Y, Bloom, and I was born in Sacramento, California.
Is Bloom your married name or your
right.
birth name?
No, that's my married name.
Okay.
And then my previous marriage name was Martin, and my maiden name was Phelps, spelled with a P-H.
Okay. And your birthday?
9th of May, 1926.
And when did you first come to Union County?
1953.
What brought you here?
Well, my husband was born here, and we came up to visit his mother, and came up this direction to get married, and he, after that, wanted to move back home. He was born here in Cove, and his father was born here, so this was really home.
So he had an urge to come home.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now, did you said that you got married here?
Well, not actually in Cove, no. Actually, we were married in Idaho. But we came up here. We were involved. We had each had children. And we, on the way up, we were dropping children off and then stopped at his mother's. And then from there, other things happened, and we ended up going back towards California through Idaho and got married there.
Got married there.
Yeah.
Did you work when you came to Union County?
Did I work?
Were you working, or did you get a job, or?
Let's see. What was I doing before we came? Well, before we came, I was, I guess I was a foster mother is all. And I had been taking student nursing. I was going to be a practical nurse.
I see.
And I was going to college in Sacramento.
Now, did you work when you came here?
Well, we came here and bought the Cove General Store. That's the only way we could come, was to come and buy the store from his sister.
I see.
And we bought the store, and of course, from that second on, I was working 24 hours a day between home and the store.
Now, what was the name of that store?
Cove General Store.
And how long did you own it?
Oh, probably 20 years, approximately 20 years.
And you took the store over from his sister, did you say?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, tell me about that store.
Well, it was a, what did you call those old stores that had everything?
A general store?
Yeah, well, that's what the name was. But we had drugs, clothing, meat market, produce, canned groceries. We had a soda fountain, and we sold gas. We had nails and horseshoe nails. We cut glass for windows, cut pipe. We did just about everything you do in a little tiny town that has to do everything for its people.
Wow, that's quite a store. Now, how many people operated that store? Was it just you and your husband?
Yeah, just me and my husband. Then later on, as our family grew, temporarily here and there, we hired people from the Cove to work a few hours a day, the busy hours, and he hired kids out of school or kids going to school, after school they'd come and help stock shelves, and then our kids were raised stocking shelves, sweeping floors, and mopping and painting. And
what were the general hours of the operation?
Well, my husband would leave here probably about 7 in the morning, and do things he had to do to open, and then he'd open the store from 8 until, about 9, except that in a small town, it was hard to get people out that wanted to sit around and visit.
In the store.
By the old potbelly stove. So we got rid of that.
And that got rid of your visitors?
Well, a lot of them. There were some that would lean on the ice cream chest and visit and just like to stand there. Lonesome old bachelors, mainly, that did that.
I see. Now, was this the main business in Cove at that time as far as stores or picking up supplies?
Well, I think originally it was, because it started out as just a feed store. And then went into, gradually added on things, you know. But there was another store at the corner across from the school when we came.
Uh-huh.
And that was in 1953-54 that we actually came up here and lived.
Let's talk about the, you said there were horseshoe nails?
Oh, yeah.
And so you were selling... was that a popular item?
Well, it was a hardware store in the back.
As well.
It was hardware, yeah. Each section was in a place by itself in the store. And the hardware was a very big part of the store, yes. People would come here to get odds and ends so they could repair things because they didn't want to drive clear to La Grande.
And that would go for horseshoes as well?
Horseshoe nails.
Horseshoe nails.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, was the before we go back to the store, was the road paved between Cove and La Grande then?
When we came, oh yes. But in the beginning, of course, it wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I have stories from way back because of I took care of my mother-in-law, and of course, the family. I heard lots of stories, so you know, I could go way back to when they had to go by horse and buggy, and it was a full day's trip, you know, or even a 2-day trip. So
it sounds like still it might have been considered sort of a journey just to go to La Grande even when you came to town.
Well, men that were working on their farms, it was.
Uh-huh.
They didn't want to take the time out to go, see?
I see.
And they could pick up their hardware here. Now they go to Union. A lot of people go to Union to buy their quick supplies when they're fixing something and run out. They didn't want to take the time out for the work to go. But, no, it wasn't. I had to go almost every day for the store to buy fresh produce and fresh meat because we had a meat counter and sold fresh meat, hamburger and steaks and bacon, you know, the usual.
How were your other inventory or supplies delivered out there?
Well, at that period, it was you had to order a certain amount for the big chain grocers, wholesales, to come to your store. But it wasn't a great amount. Of course, it was in those days for us because we didn't have much money. We paid it all to get the store.
Right.
But you had to have a certain amount to buy your staples. It eventually got to be about $5,000 worth of groceries before they deliver. But then the little ones came, and I like the milk trucks that brought the milk and I think they called them tobacco places, but they carried sundries, candy and tobacco and all that kind of stuff. And they would come every week. Different trucks came and helped us that way. And, of course, the bread trucks came every other day or something like that to bring.
Did you make anything yourself that was sold in the store, pastries or other food items?
Oh, no,
like
no.
It
there was no time.
Up.
Yeah, we had, in fact, they brought fresh donuts when they'd come from the donut shops. They'd pick them up and drop them off.
Do you recall who your major suppliers were, these upper-end places that you had to order from?
Well, there was a La Grande grocery, I think it was called, in La Grande, that we ordered from. Then they ordered from their suppliers, and it was brought, and then they brought it to us.
Okay. Did you say say that you pumped gas there also?
Oh, yeah.
Who delivered the fuel? Was it a brand name or local outfit?
Oh, well, they were local in La Grande, of course, Chevron or, I can't even remember those things. Of course, my husband was in charge of a lot of that, you know, so I didn't, I waited on customers and did the billing and the taxes and the bookkeeping and waited on the counter, but he did a lot of that, so I didn't.
Now, what kind of technology or equipment did you have to operate your store? And I'm not trying to be funny, but
I
do know that it's different then than it was now.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah.
It was better then, I'll tell you.
Well,
yeah, you could get in the cash register and get money and make change. Now, if the electricity goes down, nobody can do anything.
That's true. Did you have a cash register?
Yeah, we had an antique cash register. You push the keys and push the button and it popped open the drawer.
So it was
single drawer.
Was it mechanical instead
it was,
of electric then?
Oh, yeah, it was mechanical. It wasn't electric. And then we had a meat slicer, hand meat slicer, that wasn't electric.
So would you buy your meat in bulk and then cut it down to portion sizes? Or?
Well, we bought most of it cut. But my husband would cut pork chops and bacon. I think that's about all he cut.
Uh-huh.
He bought, because we didn't buy that much, we wanted it fresh, we didn't buy, you know, a whole lot. So we just brought, and there was a meat place in La Grande. Can't even remember the name of that. It was out there past Ann's, I know, out that direction, but...
How about your bookkeeping and that sort of thing?
I did it all.
And that was all, did you have equipment for that? That was all done by hand, your bookwork?
Well, the charge accounts were all written by hand and a yellow copy given to the customer each time they charged. But then we had to keep those added up at the store. And we had an adding machine that you punched your numbers in and then pulled hand crank down the handle. And did that, and then of course at the end of the month you had to have it all ready for people that paid regularly at the first of the month.
So that was that your policy for? Was this a local way of issuing credit?
Yeah.
And they would typically pay at the first of the month.
Yeah. Well, whenever their paycheck came in, you know, the people that were farmers, if they got milk checks, they might pay it at a different time. So basically we had tried to keep them up pretty much, but we did have people that paid once a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was that like after the harvest or?
Right, after the people that lived here in their little houses and had their own little cows and stuff, and then they'd go off and pick apples and follow the apples from California to Washington.
Oh.
Or the cherries and the different things, and they'd come back home for the kids to go to school, and then they would write out a check and pay us the full amount for the year.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it was. It was hard on us, but they were good customers, and they were faithful in paying. More faithful than a lot of the wealthy ones that lived close.
Did you have any problems with any of that?
Oh, mercy, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a big investment that we never got. And, you know, we went out of business. Why? People that never did pay their bills. About $5,000. Of course, that was a lot in those days.
Yeah. Did people typically pay cash then or write checks or what would they
do? Both. Both. It was, you know, equally used. A lot of people paid cash because they'd run in, but a lot of them just would holler, you know, the funny story, if you want to hear funny stories.
Sure.
Let me let my aunt's dog in. Okay. I'm taking care of the dog and she's barking.
Right.
Excuse me. Let's see, people, when we first came into the store, why, everybody knew who we were. But my husband had lived in California and other places for many, many years and hadn't lived here, so he didn't know a lot of the people, and he couldn't always remember their names from when he was a kid here. But they would come in, and they'd pump their own gas. They'd stop and pump the gas because they'd see we were busy. And then they'd, instead of coming in and waiting to write it down, they'd just holler, "Hey, Ed or Bobby, I just bought $5 worth of gas," and away they'd go. Well, I didn't even know who they were a lot of times. So we never got that money because I didn't know who to write it down to. And if you were with a customer, you just kept working. And then somebody else would come in and grab a loaf of bread, holler, "Hey, I'm taking a loaf of bread." So it was, and nothing was priced, by the way. There were no prices on anything. When my sister-in-law and we bought it from my husband's sister, the Gorhams, and when we bought it, they had come up it so slowly, and prices didn't change very fast in their day. So they had it all in their heads. They knew how much everything was, but they weren't very good with the books. Anyway, when they made sandwiches for their counter and milkshakes, people came all the way from Le Grand to come out here and get the good sandwiches and milkshakes because it was so cheap. They could get it so cheap. Well, they were losing money with every sandwich and milkshake they were making. And of course, when we took over, we had to process everything and figure it out. And so we didn't keep that soda fountain very long. It wasn't making money.
So that was where I was going to ask about that too. So the soda fountain, sandwiches, and milkshakes.
Yeah, maybe a cup of hot soup, but mainly, you know, things we could make up out of the store because we had bologna and cheese and ham and stuff all for all kinds of sandwiches. We carried all kinds of lunch meats to sell in the meat section, so we could just run over and get whatever they wanted. And then we had lettuce because we had produce. So we'd go and get what we needed.
Now, was it just easier to let the soda fountain part of it go than it was to raise the price?
Oh, it was easier because for a family store and the kids were in school, it was just my husband and I. And if he had to go to town, I couldn't pump gas and make sandwiches.
Right.
Because for one thing, you've got to scrub your hands every time you do anything and then come back to the soda fountain. And it was such a time-consuming split. And in the meantime, somebody'd come in and want a dozen eggs that we couldn't handle it. And we wouldn't have made enough. Well, we couldn't because we had to pay the money we borrowed to buy the store.
Yes.
And raising six children, we didn't make any money. We just ate and lived out of the store. We wore the clothes. We ate the food. We used the gas. Everything from the store.
Now, when did you let that store go?
Well, I just don't have a date in my head. I can't help you.
Okay.
I think Anne could help you there because she remembers how old she was.
Oh.
When, you know, I think.
I think you said when we began, though, you had it about 20 years.
Well, that's what I always said, around 20 years that we had it. And we took over probably 1954. So you could figure that out pretty easy.
Okay.
Say 1975, we quit or something like that.
Well, let's talk about the business of customers that hung out at your store.
Well, that was another thing that the soda fountain encouraged. They'd come in and have a cup of coffee and sit there and want to visit. We had a couple of ladies that did that every night, almost.
And so was your store considered sort of a gathering place then?
No, not really. It was never more than one person at a time or two people that happened to accidentally meet at the time. No, it really was. At that time, when we came, they also had a pool hall across the street. And that's where the gathering of the men would be, you know, to play pool. And they might run across the street to our store and get something for it, but mainly there. And women didn't do that in those days, you know. And kids didn't either.
They didn't go to the pool hall.
No. The men or the women or the kids didn't gather there. They gathered bars and their maybe around the school. So there really wasn't that type of a gathering place.
Now, did your I think you said that children grew up around the store. Did they? What did they do to help out?
Oh, they waited when they got old enough, of course. When they came here, why they were, the oldest girl was like 12, 13, 12. And then Whitey and Sherry, my daughter and his son, were a month apart. They were, 10-ish, 9, 10. And then the younger ones who were on down. But, as the Patty worked in the store and Whitey, they would sweep, and then gradually they'd wait on a customer for a loaf of bread or something, you know, because they could knew the prices. And of course by then our prices were all marked, because we started marking everything as soon as we came in the store.
So would this be part of a routine of chores or responsibility that was given?
Oh yeah, they had to come and sweep the store every night after a certain hour, like 8 o'clock. They'd come and sweep the store, and let's see, they had different responsibilities depending on the child, but mainly sweeping and stocking shelves, and then in between that, like I said, if somebody came in for something while Ed was out pumping gas, why then they'd probably write down them. But see, when they were up there, I was here. And when I was there, the kids were either in school and Ed was off to La Grande. So it's a hard thing. You know, it's just, you're used where you're needed at the time.
Right.
Ed was the one that was there from 7 till 10. And when he ordered, on Monday night, he stayed and ordered his big orders from the grocery outlet, and that would keep him there till 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning, and then he'd be down there again at 7 in the morning.
Wow.
Of course, it was a cement floor, and he was on his feet all those hours.
Now, what's happened to that store since then? Was it sold to somebody else? Or?
Well, it was sold several times. We sold it, and then people couldn't make the payments, and they come back, or people, we had two couples coming by the store from California, and they were a young couple. Excuse me, you'll have to forgive me. I got into some cigarette smoke.
Darn it.
That was last Saturday, and
I heard about that.
I can't seem to throw it, and I'm not ready to go to the doctor yet, but goes into pneumonia if I'm not careful.
Now, what did you do after you sold the store?
Well, we sold it and tried to retire, but like I said, we sold it to those couples, and then they came in there and thought that all you had to do was stand there and take the money.
Oh.
They had no conception of what they were getting into. So if they wanted to go skiing or go snowmobiling, they just closed the store. Well, then people that had for years come past La Grande and come home to shop quit coming because they couldn't count on them. They'd close 2 days for the holidays or something else, and so they just start buying in La Grande, and the business gradually went down. Well, they found out they couldn't do it, so we had to take the store back. And then we sold to somebody else, I forget who. Well, I could tell you, but it isn't necessary.
Right.
And they really didn't want the store, but they came in there and stripped it.
What do you mean by that?
They took everything that wasn't nailed down. We had we also sold kerosene and vinegar by the gallon or the quart, and we had old-fashioned spigots, and they were antiques. They stripped them of those things, and we had an old pump type thing that pumped the kerosene out into bottles for people that would come and buy a bottle of kerosene or whatever. And they took all those things out the back door and got rid of them and sold them, I guess, for antiques. Then they stripped the store of a lot of the nails and hardware stuff, all the hardware stuff, pipe cutting tools and things like that, and basically stripped the store and then of any value things. And then they didn't want it, so we got it back again. But each time it was worth less. And then the last couple of people didn't pay the taxes, they didn't pay the lawyer fees and all that, so we finally had to just let the store go. We lost it. So it went, you know, it just gradually went downhill. One couple that had it that didn't keep the floors swept and didn't keep it clean, well, people quit going into a place if it isn't clean and
right.
Stocked nicely. So my husband couldn't go in the store after a certain period. He couldn't go in there anymore. It upset him.
So what went on then after the store was all finally disposed of?
Well, it stayed empty for a long time, and then some people bought it, and from, I don't know, taxes, I guess, and they tried to make a home out of it. They tried to make a coffee house out of it. It just never worked for anything. Then it was empty for a long time again, and I think now there might be somebody else trying to live in there. I'm not sure. I just don't even look.
What did you do next after that was finally all done and said?
Well, in the meantime, we needed money because we never had enough to keep the store going and the family. I had gone back into nursing, and I worked nights at the hospital and with a St. Joe hospital and helped the sisters out there. And then I worked in the daytime at the store, and in between that, I kept the family going. And my husband kind of retired, and then I could see that wasn't going to work. He got an opening came, and we got him working at the cemetery, and that kept him busy the rest of his life, and he loved it.
I heard about that, and I've toured that cemetery. Ann took me out there showed me his work.
Yeah.
Now, you said you went to work at St. Joseph's Hospital, the old St. Joe's Hospital.
Yeah.
This is by the college.
Yeah.
France.
Yeah.
And what did you do there?
I nursed. I was a nurse. I wasn't a registered nurse, and I didn't make it to the practical nurse. It was supposed to pay you 3/4 of a registered nurse because you had to go to college and study
right. To
become that. In California is where I did that. And I was well enough trained and had gone. I only had 3 months left to go, but I couldn't get it around here, so I was of great help to the sisters. I could do hot packs or specialty things. I could take care of treatments, and I had special patients, and just was a nurse's aide, I guess you'd call it, but a little more so. I taught the new help how to make beds and do things. And, I charted in the office for the sisters.
Now, were the sisters also the main nursing staff there?
Yes, they were the main staff.
Did they employ nurses from around?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, they had a lot of nurses' aides, and a lot of women that had come up the ranks from a nurse's aide and worked there for the sisters long enough that they were given shots and doing all kinds of extra things. My best friend was one of those. She lived here in Cove.
I see. Did any men work at the hospital in nursing at that time?
Not that I remember. No, no. There weren't any men involved. Other than just the doctors.
But no men in the nursing aid orderly category there?
No,
either.
There were no orderlies.
Okay. And what did you do after that?
Well, I kept retiring, and I went to where I went to work. Of course, husband was still working at the cemetery. I helped him every summer at the cemetery, but I also got a job. Let's see, I have to remember what came first. I helped out a friend, a couple of friends a couple of times. I said to one lady at Eastern Star one night, she was wanted to know if any of us knew anybody that would help her get her house, the big Conley Ranch out here, ready for a big Eastern Star program or something she was going to have at her house. And so I waited till everybody was gone, and I said, well, I said, I've got the time. If you need help, I'll help you for a couple of weeks. So I worked there 5 years.
That couple of weeks turned into 5 years.
Yeah.
At the Conley Ranch.
Yeah.
What did you do to help them?
Oh, I wrapped packages. I made table decorations for parties. I cleaned house. I wasn't a maid. I never made their beds unless we were stripping them to vacuum and clean the mattresses and clean the closets. I really didn't pick up after them or, you know, none of that. I never did dishes.
Were in their private employee then?
Right. Yeah. I think I was hired as a cook for the ranch.
And it's still December 16th, 2005. We're continuing our interview with Barbara Bloom. So it was just the family?
Well, yeah. It was actually just Virgil Conley, who never married. He lived at home, and Maxine Stewart, who had come home and probably taken care of her mother. But then Dr. Ross in La Grande and his wife, he died, and she that was very ill with cancer, and she came home to live. And then, I think that's all. So it was the three of them there at the house for a while, and then she passed away, and it was back to two.
And these are the people you worked for then?
Right, the Conleys, yeah.
How big was the place?
Well, big enough to have two elevators.
Really?
There was an elevator going upstairs to the upstairs part of the house. They didn't use it much. I never used it. I just ran up the stairs because there was, two active bedrooms upstairs, and then there were two downstairs. So it was just, but there was three bedrooms upstairs, two downstairs. And there was an elevator that went from the main floor to the basement where they kept their supplies. So if you needed supplies, you went to the elevator and went down.
You used the elevator to do that?
Yeah.
Now, was this a working ranch?
Oh, yeah, it still is. Big working ranch.
How big and what did they produce there?
Wheat, cattle, I had horses, but I didn't know any of the business end of it.
Right.
But I just knew they had a lot of land. Well, see, they had three men, Grant Conley and Merrill Conley and Virgil Conley, and they all owned large land that originally had belonged to the father. And so they had a big ranch. And then on the main ranch, which is where I worked, is where they took care of all the trucks and the tractors, and they had a mechanic. But he never came in to eat or anything. I didn't have anything to do with them.
That's very interesting. And you were there 5 years?
Yeah, about 5 years.
Don't need to know.
No.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, then I quit there, and when some people found out that I'd quit, why, somebody in the valley wanted to know if I would help take care of a lady out on the highway to La Grande, was living in a little trailer, and she wasn't well, and they wanted to know if I'd go out and clean her house once a week, and I said, oh, I guess I can help out if you need it. So I went and did that for a couple of years, and she died, and then the Nashes that worked for the Nash, what do you call it, trailer place out there.
Yeah.
Well, she had to have somebody help her for a while, and a friend of mine knew her and said, would you mind helping her for a while? So I worked there for six months or something. So it was just kind of one of those things. I kept retiring. Then I was taking painting classes in La Grande, and the woman that owned it, I didn't know her. And one day she said, "I don't know why I'm going to ask you this, but would you work for me?"
At the painting class?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the name of that?
It was Arts Plus.
And what did you do for them?
Well, I worked on the counter and sold supplies and kept
art supplies?
Uh-huh.
And how long did you do that?
Oh, several years until she went out of business, and then I worked. She was an interior decorator, so she'd go off to interior decorate, and I'd take care of the store. And if I took a painting class, and she was there, but if she wanted to leave, she'd leave, and I'd do the painting class and work for the counter. Then she went out of business, and I worked for her as an interior decorator. Oh, for a couple of years until she moved away.
Now, where was this business?
Arts Plus.
Uh-huh.
Arts Plus. Okay. It was, I was trying to think of what's in there right now. There's a little, across from Penny's,
uh-huh,
next to the bank, is where it was.
I see. And you took a painting class there. Were a lot of classes taught there?
Yeah, a lot of, yeah, they had three different teachers. They had watercolor and oils and pastels and different classes, night classes and day classes, and they sold the supplies for the classes, so that had people buying all the time for that.
Now, were these general interest classes, people who just wanted to learn painting or paint for their own enjoyment, that
yeah,
sort of thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Do you remember who any of the painting instructors were?
Oh, yeah. Jan Clark. She still lives in La Grande and does. She still teaches classes. But she's a very well-established painter. Excellent work. She wouldn't show any of it in La Grande, but she did most of her stuff out of Pendleton and out of town, other places. And then Jeannie Plank. She taught more of the toll painting type, where Jan was an artist type.
Right.
And then there was Linda, somebody, that taught watercolor. And they all still do that in different respects, but I don't know how or where.
So you came to take a painting class and you ended up working there for several more years. This sounds like you fell into a lot of jobs.
Yeah, I kept falling in. I kept retiring.
Uh-huh.
And just seemed like I wasn't supposed to, I guess. But I could always use the money, you know.
Sure.
So they didn't pay much, but
uh-huh,
it kept me busy and around people, and I love people. So
that's good.
I always enjoyed it.
Now, what kind of work... What were some of the things you did when it led into helping be an interior decorator?
Well, she papered walls and painted, and we tore down things, you know, hammer and claw things and ripped walls out and put, she would have the sheetrockers come in, I think, and did the sheetrocking, and then we would go ahead from there, mostly, and decorating. She would plan it with the owner. They were always people that had money. I mean, you had to have money to hire an interior decorator.
Sure.
To do your... But she was a... She could rewire and unhook washing machines, and we had to take out lots of plumbing and... Know how to redo things, but she did most of it, and I was a gopher, is what I called myself.
So she had the designs and the plans, and you assisted.
I just was a gopher.
Uh-huh.
I did whatever. I put a lot of glue on a lot of wallpaper.
Did you come up with it? Were you able to use that in your own personal life?
No, I never had time. No. I was involved in our church, and... pretty strong. I taught primary and children and the youth in the summer and in the winter, and Sunday school classes. And
now, did you fall into another job after that, or did you retire again?
No, I basically, when she quit with me, I retired, and then of course my husband got sick, and he died at home. I took care of him till he passed away. And then I took care of my mother for a year in the hospital bed. And so I still wasn't retired, but I wasn't getting any money either.
Right. Now, did your mother pass away up here? Was she up here that you took care of her?
Yeah, in my home here for
right.
a while, but she didn't pass away here. She had to eventually go to a home because I was getting older all the time, and she was blind, so she needed 24-hour care, and I just ran down. I couldn't.
Yeah.
She wanted me to talk in the middle of the night, and she'd wake me up, and so I couldn't get any rest.
Uh-huh.
So.
So let's talk about your church activities then. What church do you belong to there? Or do you have more to
Well, come? Yeah, I've got some old things I think you might be interested
yeah,
in that I've never read of anybody else told. Now, my husband's family came here in 1862.
Uh-huh.
So they were one of the first people in the valley.
Where did they come from?
Well, originally New York, but they went to Iowa and Ohio. You know, many years ago, in the 1800s, they'd travel so long, and then they'd settle down and stay for a while and earn the money and get ready, and then move some more.
Uh-huh.
So they would follow, and then, of course, they came on the Oregon Trail to Oregon. And a lot of them went to Wallowa, halfway. The man that came here was my husband's grandfather was my husband's great-grandfather that came here originally in 1862.
And they're
all buried up here.
And
yeah.
they came to Cove.
And he brought, yeah, well, no. Actually, let's see. Yeah, I think they did, the Blooms. The Van Schoonhovens, my husband's mother's family came later. And then they settled in Union and then moved to Cove. And then the Blooms and the Van Schoonhovens got together.
And so those two families are related.
Yeah.
Because they're the Van Schoonhoven have some involvement with the 2-3 project.
Yeah.
Out there.
Well, that's my husband's mother's brother's son.
I see.
Johnny Van Schoonhoven. And he's not in line, but he would be Johnny Van Schoonhoven, the sixth, if his father had been a John, but he was Simeon. But John the fourth, Van Schoonhoven, came here. I have that, the third and the second, first Van Schoonhovens that were in New York, or out of New York, not actually New York, but New York State.
I see. What else do you want to tell me?
Okay. When my mother-in-law told me, and some of our discussions, that the Indians, they had a ranch that now belongs to the Finneys. Oh, I don't even know if they still own it, but I think they do. It's up on the hill behind the post office. That hill that goes back there. Well, there's a ranch up there, and it was the Bloom Ranch. And the Indians used to come across from Pendleton and come across that mountain, and they'd camp on their property. And then they would trade food, you know, for moccasins and whatever. And they told my mother-in-law, they called this the Valley of the Sleeping Gods. And, you know, I've never read that anywhere.
Did they ever tell her why they called that?
Because when you look around the mountains, you see the mountains have the shape, but the main one is the Indian chief with the Indian headdress. It's right up above Cove here.
There on Mount Fanny.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'll take a
if you've never
look
seen
at
that. Well, you can see it better in the fall when the oranges and the different colors make the feathers going down the mountain. But it's a side view of an Indian, and one section of a mountain is his nose, and his chin, his forehead, and the little top point that they always had in their hair when they had it, the way they cut it, is there, and it's very interesting. My mother-in-law showed it to me when I first came here, and then you can look around and you can see all the way around to Union Mountains over on that side, on the La Grande side, going to Union. There are sleeping gods there. And this was all water out in the middle, and they had to use boats to go to La Grande many years ago. And they couldn't get to Union either. They had to build the road to Union because it was water. So that's why it's built the way it is up on the side of the hill.
Huh.
It's going around.
Yeah, well, I
and
didn't know that.
The bloom, well, I'll tell you that where there's some good stuff on the valley is at the college library at Cove in the 1800s. There's a lot of stuff up there. I found out things about they used to have a bowling alley here in Cove and a hotel that my husband's ancestors, I thought they owned it, but in studies I've found that he actually was the manager, or what do they call it now, like people get the Kentucky Fried Chicken and they have a, what do they call that? They buy it out and they kind of own that from other people, you know, and they, what do you call it?
Like a franchise?
A franchise, yeah. And I think he was a kind of a franchise manager of the hotel, but Grandfather Samuel Bloom. But anyway, they were very much involved in the Union County, and I found out that my husband's father had won playing bowling at the bowling alley.
Uh-huh.
There was a man's night and a woman's night. The women bowled in those days.
Uh-huh.
And so it was quite a little town here.
Now, were those businesses still there when you came?
Oh, no. No, okay. Because the town burnt down during the wood stove and the kerosene lantern times. It burned down twice, I think they said, two or three times the town burnt down. The only thing that was left was the bank. There was a bank here. There were parts of the bank. The bricks and things, still a little bit of it left in town when we came. That's where the tavern kind of, the restaurant that's there now, was there, but that's where it was. It was very interesting. In the jail, they had a jail and a sheriff. And
and were they done with that also when you came to Cove?
Oh, yes. It was just leftovers, yeah. But quite intriguing when you get back into it. But like I said, there's a lot of interesting history over there at the library.
Now, are there other businesses that were present when you were first
Cove
that aren't there anymore?
Yeah, there was where the ice cream, the little Cove drive-in is. That was a big machine shop type where they fixed cars and I suppose tractors and things like that. There was a beauty shop where up by the library area. It was a little more of a town then, you know. Now people do it in their homes, the beauty shops. They build a room on, you know, and a lot of things are done a little different. But it was, anyway, there was...
Now, have you always lived in the same house in Cove?
No, we came here once and moved into a... That was before Ann and Rick. When we first came here, we lived in a house that was... Well, it had about 15 windows broken in it. And no furniture, a wood stove, and a pitcher pump to pump water. And I was a city girl, but that's where we could... only place we could find to live when we came here. And then we lived there through the summer and part of the winter, and we moved downtown to the Methodist Church parsonage across from the old Methodist Church, which burnt down while we lived there. And it's a short distance from the football field Skip Pereira, the football coach, lives there now. They've remodeled and made a beautiful home there. But that's what we, and then we went, we lived up on the hill in an old house up there. And then when my mother-in-law passed away, we came here.
Now, these previous places you talked about, were those rentals?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How many children, you said six children between
yeah.
you and your husband?
Well, yeah. He had two, I had two, and we had two.
And then you had two.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
What was the age spread of those, of the children?
Well, there was Sherry and Whitey are the oldest, and they're the same age, or just a month apart. That was, Whitey was Ed's son, and Sherry was my daughter. And then the next ones, were there was 3-year difference, and then there was the next one was my son, Tom. And, well, the oldest one was Patty. She was 3 years older than Sherry and Whitey. Patty was 3 years older. Like I told you in the beginning, she was about 12 when I got her and 13 when we came here. And then the others were around 9.
Did they all finish school in Cove?
Well, basically, yes, yes. And they went on to college. Yeah, but...
Now, did you encounter... well, who doesn't encounter difficulties raising kids? But were there particular problems associated with children from different marriages in your household? Did you have that worked out? What?
Well, we worked it out. My stepchildren called me Mom of their own choice. When my daughter, stepdaughter died in California, she was married and raised 3 children. When she died, she had her ashes sent here to be buried. My stepson, Whitey, lives in Halfway, and he still worries about me and does things for me all the time, and very close. In fact, Thanksgiving, we had one, at least one from each family here. There was my daughter, Sherry, from my first marriage. My son, Tom, lives in North Bend. And then my son, stepson, was from Halfway, was here. And then Ann and her brother, Rick, were here. So there was a representative from each family.
Every
which
element.
I just thought it was so great. I just really enjoyed having them all here.
Well, that's good.
So it was a wonderful day.
Now, you're living in the house on, is it Orchard?
Yes, and it was his, my husband's mother's,
uh-huh.
and his. He bought it for her when he moved away. He made payments to her every month, or sent her the money for payments and paid the taxes on the property until she died. So that's how come we got it instead of it getting split up with the rest of the family.
And is there property associated with the house? Is that a large lot?
Yes, yeah. It's about a lot and a half, I think.
Is that barn yours that's out there?
No,
okay.
No. I wish it was, but...
Nice looking barn.
Yeah.
Was the freeway in when
no.
you moved to LeGrand, or Cove,
no.
I'm sorry?
No, the freeway wasn't.
But it was paved to LeGrand.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Was LeGrand considered a kind of a journey to a big town? Or
no,
was
uh-uh.
a chore to go to LeGrand?
No, like I said, I had to go there almost every day, not on the weekends, but went every day to pick up fresh produce and stuff. We had a good car, and no, it wasn't any project. People worked in LeGrand and worked out of LeGrand just like they do today. Basically, we was the same. Not as much, not as many women worked then. You know, a lot of women were at home in those days.
Right.
Yeah.
But
they helped on the ranches. See, they were working they just weren't getting paid and didn't go anywhere.
Yes, I have a sense of that from a few of the women that I've interviewed from around there.
Have you interviewed Arlene Goodson?
No.
Oh, she would be a fabulous one for you to visit.
I'm going to put her name on that list.
She lives next door to me.
I should have just come out there and gone door to door, huh?
Yeah, well, no, I think she's the only one left here that she came here shortly before we did, and then our husbands became close friends. And then I knew her through, well, of course, through the store. We knew everybody, so. But they sold their big ranch and moved next and rented. She still rents.
Could you say that again? They moved where?
Well, they had a big ranch out here, and that's an interesting story because they had equipment that was put here, put on their ranch from the government that registered the earthquakes in the valley, which we have them all the time, you know. They're not strong enough for us to feel, but we are in a very, very busy volcanic area.
You never felt an earthquake out there?
I think I've felt them a couple of times. When I was sleeping upstairs, I had that sensation. Of course, I was from California, so I knew the sensation.
Right.
But I never read anything about it, so nobody was aware of it. But somebody that was aware, that was familiar with earthquakes,
sure,
would have noticed it. It's never been, you know, nothing ever shook, you know. So,
How about your other activities? You talked a little bit about church.
Oh, yeah.
Which church do you belong to out there?
Well, I go to Cove Union to church. There is none in Cove.
Oh.
I belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Mormons.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
And so you said you taught
very
Sunday
active
school.
Oh, I've taught Relief Society in Sunday school. I did a lot of solo work. Sang in the choir for many, many, many years.
So they don't have a ward in Cove. You
no,
go to Union.
I go
that
to Union.
Uh-huh. How far is Union from Cove?
About 8 miles.
Okay.
People say you go clear to Union, and I always laugh and say, if I lived at home in Sacramento, it would take me longer to get to church if it lived just blocks away than it does for me to get to Union. You know, from
sure.
Cove to Union is straight.
Mm-hmm.
There's no
yep
one stop sign.
Yep. And you're right, if you were in the Bay Area or somewhere that
I lived in San Francisco and Oakland and
uh-huh
Alameda and Redwood City, and I mean I came from the big cities. So this
it's
was in fact I came
different
to this I came to this town to visit and be introduced to my mother-in-law to be. And they told me they were going to take me to town
uh-huh
after a while. So we got in the car a couple of times and went to see somebody and went up to the swimming pool to see the pool. And then we went someplace else and I forget, out in the valley to see where the elk or something. And then we came back to the house and I said, well, you said you were going to take me to town. When are we going to town? And they laughed and said, you've been through it 3 times. And I've told that story so many times.
Oh, my.
Because it was hilarious.
Now, did you belong to the Mormon Church before you got married?
Yeah, I was baptized when I was 8, but I wasn't active until after I was up here.
Okay. Would that be considered being raised in the church then?
No, I wasn't. No, I wasn't raised in the church.
Okay. And so...
But my parents and my grandparents were all members and came over to Salt Lake in the beginning, so...
Did they?
Yeah, so, but they had moved from Utah to California on a ranch, and there weren't any churches there at the time. In those days, there weren't that many church buildings, and so they just kind of got lost in the shuffle. And, but I had all the, what would you say, the morals and the, and not knowing why, but I was raised with those standards.
The upbringing.
Yes, but it was a very subconscious thing that was never talked about.
Uh-huh.
It was just the way I was raised.
Yeah.
So when I came up here, it was easy for me to The only thing I did that I had to give up was coffee. Uh-huh. And I didn't have to give that up. I could drink it all I want. I mean, that's a choice thing.
Sure.
So.
Sure. What other activities are you involved in or do you volunteer?
Well, I was a 4-H leader. I taught knitting. What else did I? I helped with the leather. I taught the earlier kids the, I don't think I did it much. A little bit with Ann and Rick. I had all the tools for leather tooling. Let's see what else. It's hard for me to remember all the things I've done.
You were mentioning Eastern Star.
Well, I belong to that because my sister-in-laws and brother-in-laws were very active in the Masons and the Eastern Star, and I was a soloist, and they wanted me to sing, so I had to join.
I see.
So because of my husband and his families, I joined it, but I was never really...
You never held office?
Well, I finally agreed to once. But I really didn't want to get into it that much.
Where is the chapter in your area?
It's the old Mormon church. It's out on the, it's before you come to the school, and it's just a big old building with no windows in it. I think, there's windows on the side, but they're blanked, kept covered all the time.
I see.
Now, the Eastern Star and Masonic is a secret organization, so they have different types of things. It's the only building of that type in that area. You know where the football field is?
Yeah.
It's a block towards Le Grand from the football field, okay. Right in that area.
Uh-huh.
Can't miss it once you look for it.
Let's see, I'm running out of tape on this side. Let's just turn it over now.